You're listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2024 Vuelta a España from Lisboa to Madrid.
Oh, Santi Cazorla. Oh, Santi. It should be Cazorla.
Yeah, nothing to do. This Cazorla is from Asturias, and that this Cazorla is in Jaén, and that other Cazorla is in Asturias.
We need to tell people what I'm singing about. Santi Cazorla is an Arsenal football legend. And obviously today we're finishing Cazorla. And that is where we are from. And Arsenal are about to play Aston Villa, but I'm not going to mention it again. I will just say that the most appropriate winner today would have been an Arsenal fan. And it would have been Theo Gegenhardt. He did not win the stage. That's the first spoiler of tonight's episode. Fran, describe this. It's almost a very, very beautiful scene. We have to crane our neck slightly and look underneath the branches of pine trees, conifers, and various other things. And we're also sitting, 25 metres from where the finish line was just, 45 minutes ago. But Fran, describe as best you can the scene that we can just about see.
So we are just besides the small chapel of the Virgen de la Cabeza in Cazorla, which is obviously in the outskirts of the small village of Cazorla, as it is an hermitage. We are sitting in the tents that were displayed for the media present at the finish line area. We are afraid that we may get kicked out at some point, but so far what we have is some shade and some fresh air and some amazing views of all the sea of olive trees characteristic of this region in Jaén.
And Antonio Tiberi just going past in his team's vehicle, being taken down from the mix zone. That's another spoiler. He's still in the white jersey tonight. Fran, you mentioned the trees. We're overlooking a sea of sorts, aren't we? I mentioned the sea of olives last night. 66 million olive trees in the province of Jaén. On the podcast before, we've been through all the crazy statistics about this province and how much olive oil it supplies to, the whole world. Crazy percentages. So I won't do it again. We had a debate on the podcast with Joe Dombrowski once about the quantity of olive oil produced in Jaén.
Yeah, and isn't it amazing the geometry of the olive trees? I mean, I like how, of course, it's the hand of the human being, but it has displayed some interesting patterns here and there, isn't it?
Beautiful. Very beautiful, Fran. Of all the provinces, and we've talked about a few of them this week, of Andalusia, this is probably the one that has the most sort of hold on me, just because of these olive trees. It's the most extraordinary landscape, and particularly this morning in Úbeda, which looks out, which has a perfect sort of 360 view. It's a perfect balcony over this sea of olive trees. And it's really quite something to behold. Maybe, Fran, that is our perfect cue to go back to this morning, as we usually do. A lot of loose threads to tie up, as always, from yesterday's stage. That very intriguing finale, particularly with how Red Bull Bora rode. Last night we weren't able to speak to anyone from Red Bull Bora. We weren't able to speak to Pachi Vila, the direct sportive. He said he had things that he needed to understand before he communicated about the way the team rode yesterday. Fran, I spent a lot of time at the Red Bull Bora bus this morning, and I was told Pachi was busy, and he was busy for 45 minutes.
He's a very busy man.
He was obviously extremely busy. And then after 45 minutes, I was told that it wouldn't be possible to have an interview. So we were none the wiser. And I was pretty aggrieved, I must say, having waited 45 minutes in the sun and sacrificed what I thought, all other interviews in the morning. I just managed to get to the mix zone at the last minute for a couple of other interviews, in which we should probably hear now, which were interesting in their own right. I mentioned the loose threads that we had to tie up from yesterday. We had that, talking of intriguing storylines, we had that interview from Pavel Sivakov last night, who talked about Alexander Vlasov, his former compatriot, because of course Pavel Sivakov no longer represents Russia as of about a couple of years ago. Vlasov had chased him down in the closing kilometers yesterday, and Pavel Sivakov said it seemed personal because Primoz Roglic didn't sprint, Vlasov's teammate. So I thought it would be only fair to ask Vlasov what he would like to respond to that. We also heard from the red jersey, Ben O'Connor, still 4 minutes and 51 seconds ahead of Primoz Roglic this morning. So here they are. We'll go Vlasov first, then Ben O'Connor. Alex, last night, Pachi said, well, he was sort of confused by certain things in the race. I mean, what was the analysis in the team of how you'd ridden yesterday, particularly that last climb?
We want always a hard race because we have a strong team, pretty much is good, and also the last climb of yesterday was, let's say, for safety reasons, less bunches it, more safety is decent.
And yesterday also, you did a great job in the last couple of kilometres. Pavel Sivakov wasn't very happy. He said, I don't know why Vlasov was pulling so hard. I don't know if it's personal with him. What's your explanation?
No, nothing personal, of course. You know, it's a race, not the goal. He said yes from the radio to close the gaps, to jump, to close the gaps. And that's why I thought maybe pretty much we'll do a sprint, because when I saw him, he was always on the wheel of a boat. So I thought, okay, maybe he tried today, so I will do my job. I will close the gaps.
What did he say to you, Primoz, because we haven't had him in here today? Why didn't he sprint?
He said, I think he lost his wheel and was a bit chaotic probably. And he said, he didn't feel that he could be top three, you know, for the bonus seconds in the sprint, and he just gave up.
Well, Ben, in the sort of analysis of what had happened yesterday, did you sort of come to the conclusion that maybe Bora were panicking a little bit?
Yeah, I guess they overdid it a little bit in the run-in, but it's hard to kind of draw full conclusions. I think today will probably be an interesting one to see, because I mean, it's like ideal for Primoz, it's like down his Palmares, so I think this would be a better way to see rather than yesterday.
Yesterday you said it would be a test of legs. If you have any doubts about your condition, what are they, or about the preparation you've done for this race?
Yeah, I mean, I was coming into this race, we said from the start that I wanted to be in the top five overall. I've said I wanted to win a stage as well, and I obviously did that, but like the GC was always the team's number one objective. Whilst mentally in my head, to win the stage was a bit more like kind of like this icing on the cake kind of thing. So it's sweet they have like a kind of double positive now where I am ready, I prepared for this, and it was always my second biggest goal of the year, so I don't think I should shy away from the fact that I'm here to be on the GC and here to race it.
And last one, Ben. Victor Campenaert said at the tour that he felt becoming a dad had changed him hormonally. He just felt like a different guy. He had extra watts. Have you experienced any of that?
I've had like a dozen guys, Richie Poor in particular, like dad power for sure. It's a thing. I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it takes a little bit more stress away from focusing only on yourself.
There are some studies that say your testosterone goes down when your partner is pregnant.
Could be true. I'm not surprised, but I think maybe it just shifts your mindset, so you're not always so worried about yourself. So maybe you can apply yourself a little bit better in both training and racing, even if lack of sleep or times we don't really want to go help out the bub, but you have to. Maybe makes you a stronger person just by that nature.
And what are you? And today's going to be a matter of seconds, maybe. But how do you see tomorrow?
Oh, tomorrow's a really hard day. Tomorrow, I'd say, is probably. I mean, all of us have done these climbs, Hazianus, Monachil, and yeah, it's pretty filthy, Hazianus. But I've always felt pretty good on it, both in training and in last time we went up there. So yeah, I think I'm excited for it. But yeah, there should be big gaps tomorrow.
Can you try and save anything for tomorrow today?
No, it doesn't matter, because in the end you got a 4K for all-in effort with probably a 1K sprint at the top. So yeah, there's no saving energy. There's no saving energy the rest of this race, to be fair. It's on from now on. I shouldn't be stressed because I have a pretty good lead. And in the end, it's not like we planned that I was going to come here and win La Vuelta. You know, we all want to do it, but it doesn't mean that you have that expectation. So yeah, I think I'm actually in a really good place where if I'm great, then yeah, I can make something, but it's not like I have to chase. I think chasing is always the one where it's a little bit more stressful. And in the end, if I do lose the jersey one day, I know I would have fought my best to hold on to it, and that's how it goes.
So, Fran, testosterone levels of riders whose partners are expecting babies or have just given birth. That sounds like a subject for another podcast.
Yeah, and one that I would love to prepare. So just commission me and I will talk to three doctors and three coaches.
I have read about this before and I was pretty confident, but I didn't do any sort of last minute reading this morning about it. So it was one of those moments, Fran, or it was one of those interviews where you sort of say something in a question and then you're gripped by fear because you think, oh my God, I've got this completely wrong. This is going to be embarrassing when I go back to the car and start sort of doing post hoc research and realizing that I'd completely got the wrong end of the stick. But no, it is extremely well documented that there is a significant dip in testosterone of men, males, whose partners are expecting, and indeed, I think, which continues after their partners have given birth. Anyway, hadn't been affecting Ben O'Connor, certainly not negatively up until now, in the Vuelta a España. We would find out whether it would affect him negatively today. It's time, I think, for today's tale of the etapa.
El resumen de la etapa. The tale of the etapa.
So, Fran, stage 8, Úbeda to Cazorla, 159 kilometers, 2,641 altitude meters, entirely in the province of Jaén. Mm-hmm. Entirely?
Yes, entirely.
Yes.
The whole time.
And there's Category 2 climb and Category 3 climb. Category 2 climb was 50 kilometers to go, and then we had the final climb up to Cazorla, up to the sanctuary. What did you call it, Fran?
The chapel of the Virgen de la Cabeza in Cazorla, because there is another Virgen de la Cabeza which is more renowned in Andújar. That's the miraculous one, and I've been there 4 or 5 times with my family, but that's another story.
That is another story. And that final climb I mentioned, 4.8 kilometers at 7.2%, very deceiving, because in there was a kilometer, or the final kilometer, at 13.5%, so a bit of a sort of fake news climb. Fran, this morning, well, yesterday, we didn't mention at all that Tymon Arensman had problems with the heat, serious problems with the heat yesterday, and so much so that he needed medical attention when he crossed the line. There were fears that he wouldn't start today, but he did start, and by all accounts, he was doing okay this morning. Elie Gilbert of Arkea, he did not start the race today. I've already said that Ben O'Connor was in red, 4 minutes 51 seconds ahead of Primoz Roglic. So lots of attacks in the first hour, some big groups formed, 32 riders at one point, then there was a group of 38 riders. There were some big names attacking, Wout van Aert among them, but Red Bull Bora were the team, as I understand it. I wasn't watching all of the first hour, but as I understand it, they were sort of keeping things broadly under control, shutting things down, and moves did continues to get shut down. Finally, the following trio got a gap with 110 kilometers to go. That was Mauro Schmidt of Team Jayco Alula, Harold Tejada of Astana, and Chase Lemreiser of Team DSM Firmenich Post NL. With 94 kilometers to go, so another sort of 15 kilometers down the road, a group of counter-attackers caught front three, giving us the following race situation. Sam Omen was up there, Little Trek. Luca Vergalito, Il Bandito of Alpecin de Koenig, who was there. Oyer Lascano of Movistar. Schmidt, the aforementioned Schmidt. Mathis Lebel of Arkea. Lemreiser of DSM. And Jon Izagirre of Cofidis. And Harold Tejada, who we've already mentioned. They quickly built a significant lead with 94 kilometers to go. They had 4 minutes and 34 seconds. Decathlon were mainly pulling, and it looked as though at this point the brake was well set to go all the way to the finish line. However, things changed. With 72 kilometers to go, Team Israel Premier Tech surged to the front, particularly Riley Sheehan. And Fran, we suspected at that point that was for the benefit of Mike Woods, who I know this morning really fancied, liked the look of the final climb and felt that he had a chance of a stage win. So the gap started coming down pretty quickly. Over the first climb of the day, the Puerto del Mirador de las Palomas, that front group started to fracture. We saw some riders having trouble on the descent. Mauro Schmidt almost skidded out at one point. Lemreiser was dropped, and it all got a little bit ragged, did it not, Fran?
Yeah, it's, you know, this part of Andalusia, the Parque de Cazorla Segura and Las Villas, is renowned because it is very untouched by the humans, and there are very few roads, very small and very tricky ones. Mm. And was indeed, as the Serranía de Ronda, on which we were racing 2 days ago, it was they both were conceived as land of bandits. Mm. That's why Luca Bergalito was a very fitting escapee for both stages.
That was almost as fitting as Theo Gegenhardt winning the stage. It remains to be seen what Theo Gegenhardt did on the final climb. Fran, in the GC group, there were a couple. Well, there was one rider in particular that was having problems, Kian Uttebroeks, who has been struggling the last few days. He struggled yesterday. He was one of the riders dropped pretty early on that final climb. And we saw him struggling at the back with 38 kilometres to go. The gap continues to come down. Israel were really cranking it up now. Dylan Turns started pulling as well. And at the bottom of the Puerto del Mirador de las Palomas descent, the very bottom, as the front group came into Cazorla for the first time, there was a bit of a circuit around Cazorla. Oyar Lascano counterattacked, and again, Schmidt and, no, sorry, it was Vergalito and Tejada caught up with him. And finally, again, we got a more settled picture going into the bottom of the final climb. Meanwhile, behind them, the lead outs had started. Decathlon were leading out, Bruno Armijai were leading out for Ben O'Connor. We saw Dani Martinez for Primoz Roglic leading out as well. UAE riders close to the front. And then a crash. Mm-hmm. Do we know exactly what happened in the crash, Fran?
It was a crash with Alexander Blasov, and it was a huge mess because it was not exactly at the forefront, but near the front. So many riders were caught up.
Say that again. Forefront.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I tried to get excited, you know.
That's dramatic. Okay. So, and that crash happened with about 4 kilometers to go. And very soon afterwards, so we knew that, you know, there were some big fishes caught behind. Remember, Tejada, Vergalito and Lascano are still up the road at this point, but their gap is, it's a matter of seconds now. But Roglic surged. And initially, Ben O'Connor was on his wheel. Richard Carapaz was in close attendance. Cepeda, also of EF Education First, was in close attendance as well, as were Mas. And the only UAE rider we could see close to Roglic at this point was Pavel Sivakov. Again, it came back together. Then 2.5 kilometers ago, Roglic went again. Mas was with him. Carapaz bridged. Felix Gall chased back with Ben O'Connor on his wheel. All looking pretty good for Felix Gall and Ben O'Connor at this point. Tejada was caught. Finally, the last survivor of the break was caught. 1 kilometer to go. And then, Fran, from 1 kilometer to go, I would say that the finishing order, the results tell us pretty much what happened. Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed.
Finally, it was Primoz Roglic and Enric Mas who got a gap. Enric Mas wasn't doing a whole lot of work, was he?
No. He was just sitting on his wheel. He said that Primoz pace was just too strong and that he couldn't take any turn.
But at one point, it looked as though Enric Mas might even Roglify Primoz. Mm-hmm. Or massify Roglic.
it would have been massive.
I don't think anyone's been Enric'd or massified. And sure enough, Primoz Roglic, after the Roglification of, what was the climb the other day that he
Pico
won?
Villuercas.
Pico Villuercas. He has also now Roglified Cazorla. Mm-hmm. Fran, can I hand over to you to give us the top 10 and pick out some other relevant names, because there was a lot of interesting stuff that happened further down the rankings.
So behind Primoz Roglic and Enric Mas, we find Mikel Landa and Antonio Tiberi. Antonio Tiberi.
The Tiberi police are out in force yet again. It's been a busy week for them.
So I even spoke with him today. I mean, I am ashamed of myself. So Mikel Landa, 14 seconds down. Antonio Tiberi, 17 seconds down. Right behind them, Skil Mose and Carlos Rodriguez, 21 seconds down. Followed by Eddie Dunbar. Who for the first time we saw near the forefront of the race. The forefront. See, so he was eighth today, 26 seconds down on Roglic, with Leonard Van Etbol, Jack Hyke rounding out the top 10. Richard Carapaz lost 39 seconds, while Ben O'Connor current red jersey wearer, lost 46 seconds on top of those 10 bonus seconds that Primoz Roglic took on him by winning the stage. Zach Del Toro was 1 minute and 1 second down, very well supported by Adam Yates, who was on domestic duty for him today. Right behind them, Sepp Kuss at 1 minute 7 seconds, and the big
one name so far in this tale of the etapa has been conspicuous by his absence. He's the fella who started the day in third in general classification.
João Almeida.
What happened?
Yeah, 60th. He was in 60th position at the finish. He lost nearly 5 minutes, 4 minutes 53 seconds, and effectively fell out of contention from the overall.
Wow, I'm just looking. He lost 23 places on general classification. Fran, we mentioned that Ben O'Connor, well, he'd started to struggle in the last kilometre or two. Felix Gau even sort of detached himself from Ben O'Connor, which was sort of understandable. You and I both drove up this final climb, the final kilometre. It was so steep that it would have been very difficult, I think, to stay in touch, stay in contact with a team leader at that point. So I don't think any sort of controversy there. I tried to speak to Felix Gau at the finish, but he didn't do any interviews. He turned straight around and rode back down the climb. But it was quite a hefty bill at the end of the stage that landed on Ben O'Connor's table, wasn't it, Fran? Again, I'm going to pass over to you to give us the general classification, the first few positions, and also look a bit further down to see where everyone else has ended up.
So Ben O'Connor is still in the lead in the GC. He keeps a healthy, sizable lead on Primoz Roglic of 3 minutes 49 seconds despite losing 56 seconds today. Third is Enric Mas, much to the delight of every Spanish journalist around. He's the Movistar leader, you know, he's the Movistar leader, and obviously
I saw some shameless cheerleading at the finish line.
Come on, it's only normal. I mean, Movistar still leads the way for Spanish cycling, you know, it's still the reference point. So he's third on the GC now, 4 minutes 30 and 31 seconds down on O'Connor. Up to fourth is Antonio Tiberi. Up to fifth is Mikel Landa. Antonio Tiberi. Oh, fifth is Mikel Landa. And then we find Leonard Van Etbel, Christian Rodriguez, who is backing up his presence in the breakaway of Pico of the stage in Cadiz with a solid performance today uphill. Eighth, Matias Kielmose, then Florian Lipovic, and Felix Gall is the rider in the 10th position. Further down, we find Carlos Rodriguez, 12th, 5 minutes and 56 seconds down on O'Connor. That is 2 minutes and 7 seconds down on Roglic. 14th, the defending champion, Sepp Kuss, 6 minutes and 22 seconds down. 17th, Mexican sensation, Isaac Del Toro, at 6 minutes 32, followed by Richard Carapaz, 6 minutes 44. And last and probably least, because of what happened today, we have João Almeida, who is now down to 26th position, 9 minutes and 6 seconds behind Ben O'Connor, and more than 5 minutes behind Primoz Roglic.
Fran, before we hear from a couple of the protagonists, I am going to just give a snapshot of the wreckage that is, well, the wreckage that we see in the UAE Team Emirates ranks tonight. Remember, this was a team who came to this race with 6 potential winners, probably. We didn't know where to look. We thought it could be Yates, we thought it could be McNulty, we thought it could be Del Toro. This is where their riders stand tonight. Their best place rider, Isaac Del Toro, 17th. Sivakov, 20th. Almeida, 26th. Yates, 27th. Baroncini, 74th. Soler, 89th. Brandon McNulty, 105th. And Jay Vine, 120th on general classification. On that shocking note, Fran, I think we should hear from 3 riders who were in the thick of it. First, you're going to hear from Primoz Roglic. You know what I mean, huh?
Yeah. Of course, we will see what he says, huh?
Okay. Then Ben O'Connor, who is licking his wounds slightly tonight. And finally, we're going to hear another hilarious interview with George Bennett after his effort, after his comparison the other day. What did he compare Primoz Roglic to? A sort of on the rocks couple and their Instagram output. Here are those 3: Roglic, O'Connor, Bennett.
He's incredible, actually. I mean, super happy to have the legs. I mean, to won the stage today, even gain some time. But yeah, tomorrow Queen stage coming. So I mean, if we can lose them 10 minutes or whatever. Anyway, I will enjoy today. We see. I mean, how still my body will respond actually of putting now day after day. Quite some efforts in, just have to take it as it goes. Oh yeah, I don't want to think about it. Hazayanas, last time I did it, I already have a nightmares when we finish on the top. Now even two times, so it's tomorrow.
Now, this time that you gained on Ben O'Connor today, that's how you're going to approach trying to get the red jersey back. Keep chipping away, bonus seconds, 10 seconds as well. Does it give you confidence today in that red jersey battle?
For sure. I mean, better to gain a bit than to lose. But still, we're still in the first week. Huh? I mean, it's like at the start of the race tomorrow. One of the queen stages to finish this first week, and then it's just hard stages, no? More to come till, I don't know, stage 17, so try to stay healthy and just do our best.
Yeah, it wasn't ideal at the end. I was just a bit cooked, to be honest. It was another super scorching kind of day. But I actually think as a team we're really good to start. Just a shame I let it slip a little bit at the end there.
I guess on a climb like today, you would have assumed you would have lost some time. So are you happy with that? I think it's around 56 seconds with Primoz. You can live with that time.
I can, but I wouldn't have chosen to have given it away like that. Yeah. And I think the final kilometer was pretty rough by myself. So definitely want to cross off as a day gone by, look ahead to the next couple and try turning around.
And just finally, it looked like your team really led into that climb, protected you well, which was important with that crash behind. And then you had Felix Gall working for you most all the way up. How did you feel that worked out for you?
No, that was good. The boys were excellent today. We were drilled, we were clean, I was safe. Actually everything was spot on. So it was just me at the helm that kind of let it slip. So a bit disappointed, sorry to the boys, but I'm still in the red jersey and I'm still a happy man.
Well, George, you guys really took the initiative there and committed. Obviously not the outcome you wanted to do. Just talk to me about the last 5 kilometres in particular.
Oh, mate, the boys are unreal. And Woodsy crashed at the bottom. And it's just, I just got a feel for him. Like, the other day, broke his chain. Oh, and then today, get taken out by a stupid crash at the bottom. The boys fully committed. And I think Mike would have done some real damage, you know? I mean, it doesn't look like he's going well because of two mountain stages. He's been bad. But he's had a rough year and I've been training with him a lot and he is back to his best and I think he would have been a real contender for the stage. And I'm just proud that the boys took it on and took some responsibility and they showed how strong they were and they had me on the limit when they were pulling. I was suffering like hell, so I don't know, mate.
Did you get a good look at what actually happened with the crash?
All I know is I had to stop at the bottom. Oh, I had to come to a stop. Lost so much positions and then I chased the whole way and I don't know what I finished.
A pretty evil final climb as well.
Yeah, I mean, typical Vuelta. I mean, Vuelta so far has been like, it's almost like a parody of itself, you know? It's like, let's go find some shit oil slick roads and then let's go where it's 40 degrees and then let's wait till it's cold in the north in September and we'll go there. And then let's do 100k transfer. You know, it's just, it's the most welter there is.
2 weeks to go.
Oh, fuck.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast Team Car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour, and this is Lionel here to tell you that this episode of our Welter coverage is sponsored by LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Now, we have our audio host, Audio Boom, who handle all of our advertising sales for us, and we're very grateful to them for that. But you may work for a business or work in a sector where you have to look after your business-to-business selling yourselves. And, well, it's tougher than ever. Despite the opportunities that are out there, you need to harness some tools to help you to focus on the right opportunities for your business. And LinkedIn, with its huge network of 1 billion people, in all manner of industries and businesses, it's a fantastic opportunity, and you need Sales Navigator to help unlock those opportunities, because the first step is identifying the right person to speak to in an organization that you're trying to sell something to. And Sales Navigator can help you do that, because it's an intelligence platform that helps professional people effectively engage with high value customers, which in turn can drive higher revenue and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator will help you target the right people in the organization. There are lots of little things that can help to put you in touch with the right person, and things that might suggest that you might have some success in selling, such as somebody changing job or moving from one organization to another. Sales Navigator, if you want to give it a try, you can get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/win. That's linkedin.com/win. You'll get a 60-day free trial. So let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Go to linkedin.com/win to get started.
So, Daniel, how much do you like road ears?
Okay, this feels like a loaded question. Go on.
No, because I mean, I haven't had so many interactions with road ears, but they have been quite kind to me. Yet today they were a bit aggressive on the Euskaltel team car. You know, apparently, by what a friend of mine just tweeted was that three road ears jumped in the middle of the cars on the rice convoy, and one of them went over the Euskaltel car and knocked a bike off the roof.
The Euskaltel car, I mean, today, Fran, when we were driving to the finish through the province of Jaén, there were numerous, I saw numerous warnings. We talked about this the other day in Extremadura, but also here, warnings about lynxes. No warning was needed for the lynx of Marbella today.
Maybe they were running from the lynx, and they attacked the Euskaltel car because they felt the threat.
Yes, yes, that's very possible, Fran.
Very possible.
Well, as we heard from George Bennett's interview, things are always sort of delicately poised on the brink of turning from, you know, the sublime. The sublime is always on the brink of turning into the ridiculous here at the Vuelta a España.
That's Spain for you, huh?
Yes.
It's a very good portrait of what Spain is, this phrase, huh? It actually is, but we can delve into that later.
Yes. Fran, before we do that, let's talk about Primoz Roglic roglifying another stage of the Vuelta a España and biting a hefty chunk out of Ben O'Connor's lead. We talked last night, I used the sort of metaphor of Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe kind of taking an axe and sort of chopping away at the tree trunk that is Ben O'Connor and his advantage. I got all sorts of suggestions of what this tree should be. Eucalyptus. There was another, I'll come up with a definitive list. I had about five suggestions, because yesterday I said that it could be a Western Australian oak. I'm not sure. I wasn't sure whether, not oak, cork tree, didn't I say? And I'm not sure if cork trees grow in Western Australia. However, it was, he made hefty inroads, did he not, Primoz Roglic? I think bigger than we expected, particularly from, you know, we heard earlier the interview I did with Ben O'Connor this morning, and you heard from that what a great mood Ben O'Connor was in. And you also saw at the bottom of the climb here that he looked incredibly sprightly. He looked ready to jump on Roglic's wheel. I must admit, at that point, I did fear for him slightly, because as discussed a couple of days ago, or yesterday, you know, we saw him in the Giro d'Italia at Europa when, again, he was lynx-like, pouncing on Tadej Pogacar. And look, we also heard yesterday about how emotional he is. And this has been sort of spun and described as a positive thing. It was certainly positive when he took the red jersey that day at Junquera. But I do wonder, and he didn't say anything to this effect in his interviews after the stage, but I do wonder whether he just did sort of write a check that his legs couldn't cash.
Exactly. I mean, no effort is free of some sort of payback, you know, as this Yiddish proverb that is my favorite one. I learned it from Mike Tyson, of all people. I learned it from Mike Tyson. But it's the brighter the light, the darker is the shade, you know. Mm. And in this case, if you put such an excellent performance as the one that he did on Thursday, it's obvious that at some point it's going to bounce back and his body won't be as brilliantly effective as it was on the previous day, unless he was, of course, the best rider of the race by far, and that way he could do these exhibitions of his force day in, day out, as Tadej Pogacar does. Mm. He did a Pogacar-like performance, but he's no Pogacar, so it's only normal that he pays for it in the subsequent days. Mm. Hence why I believe that today, the teams, like UAE, they were trying to keep the race alive for as many kilometers as possible. Why? Because that way...
Today,
the first rider to attack today was Marc Soler. Yeah. You know, right after finishing his Calipo...
The first rider to attack is always Marc Soler. That doesn't really...
No, come on. Not in every race, you know. But it's obvious why they did that. Because if they give Ben O'Connor no respite, then he's closer and closer to... He inches closer and closer to crack.
Mm.
And that's very important, not only for today, where he lost 46 seconds, plus the bonus, on a climb that didn't suit his abilities as a sort of endurance climber, but also in the light of tomorrow's stage, because tomorrow's stage is brutal.
Mm.
And if he cracks in the first or the second of the three long climbs on the menu, then he's going to lose not only his red jersey, but he's only going to fall out of contention.
Yeah, I just feel there's been a huge shift today, and a shift that is not fully conveyed by the numbers themselves. I feel as though Primoz Roglic has gone from, or Red Bull Boar have gone from a place where they were very much regretting the way they rode a couple of days ago and frankly scared of Ben O'Connor, to thinking now probably that they've got plenty of time and that they're sort of they are on the in the right place. They're poised on O'Connor's shoulder. I always used to feel, Fran, this will mean nothing to you, but when I used to play golf matches, and when you were four down, you always felt as though you were completely out of the match. But as soon as it got to three, as soon as you saw that number three, then the momentum shifted completely. And I think when they see a three rather than a four in terms of minutes deficit, then I think they will just relax. We talked yesterday about how the strategy, the tactics yesterday betrayed a level of panic and a level of anxiety and a sort of febrile feeling in the team. I think that will have dissipated.
And not only in Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, also in any other team. Do you remember what Joao Almeida said to you when you asked him, are Red Bull now under pressure, under more pressure? And his answer was, the team, Bora, has put everyone under pressure. The pressure is on everyone now. And because, of course, this is human nature. Mm. We tend to react to the last stimuli, to the first stimuli and the last stimuli.
Some franthropology here. I love this.
No, come on. It's franthropology. But I like to explain things that way, because with this kind of perspective, you not only understand cycling, you understand life in general.
Mm.
And we tend to react with the last stimuli in mind. And in that
recency
regard,
bias, we call that.
Yeah, recency bias, exactly. Yeah. So with that recency bias, everyone, all of a sudden, consider O'Connor to be the main GC candidate. When ahead of the race, no one thought that.
Mm.
I mean, people would rate him maybe between the sixth or tenth candidate for victory.
Yeah, if you'd said at the start of the Vuelta, if you'd asked people, you best guess, forget about GC positions, how many minutes do you think Ben O'Connor will finish from the winner of the race? They would probably say the spread might have been 7 to 11 minutes would have been most likely.
Because he's that kind of rider, and he's an excellent rider. This is not, this doesn't go to diminish him. Mm-hmm. And if you give him a 6-minute head start, as they gave him the other day, then he becomes dangerous. He becomes a threat for podium, and he has a slight shot mm-hmm. of winning the overall. But, you know, the height, you know, the podium is made of 3 boxes, right?
Mm.
And the third box is quite distant from the ground.
Okay.
You know, so when you stand on the third position of the podium, you are maybe 50 centimeters on the ground level.
I'm not sure if this is a metaphor or a geometry lesson at this point, but go on.
No, it is a metaphor okay. that the distance between the third place and the fourth place is quite big. It yeah. is bigger than the one between third place and second place, yeah. and bigger than the one between second place and first place. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
if you want to win a Grand Tour, you need to at least have stood on the third position of a podium to actually have that possibility. Because what you see from those eights is quite different from what you see from down, from fourth position and down. Maybe this doesn't translate well into English,
no,
but
no,
I made my best.
It translates wonderfully. Okay. It translates beautifully. Fran, I mentioned that, well, it's mainly me imagining this sort of panic and anxiety and angst in the Red Bull Bora camp. Things looked a bit panicked at the bottom of the climb again, because we had Dani Martinez leading into the climb. We've already established, we've already talked about over the last few days, he's not on top form. He's certainly not on top form. And that seemed early to me for him to be at the front, at the Arrowhead. They would have preferred an Aleotti or one of their other climbers, sort of mid-ranking climbers, to be there at that point. And then, no sooner had he done his pull than Alexander Vlasov crashed, or was entangled up in that crash. And then Primoz Roglic found himself, again, in the wind, on his own, 3.9 kilometres to go. And I had the sort of same feeling as I did yesterday when he was on his own, sort of flapping around in the wind, a long way from the summit of the climb.
But in the case of these particular climbs, it's not that bad, you know,
no.
because the slipstream, the benefit of the slipstream is not remarkable, you know. And if this happens tomorrow, for example, on the way down to Sierra Nevada, then from Sierra Nevada to Granada, then it will be a bit more problematic, you know.
Yeah,
either they manage to isolate everyone and it's everyone for himself,
yeah.
or he will need to have a teammate with him at the summit of Azayanas,
yeah.
because of how distant and wide how rolling and wide the descent is.
Fran, we're going to talk about UAE in a minute and Almeida. Before we do, I just wanted to ask you about Israel Premier Tech today. Teams who commit and are brave and end up not winning the stage for whatever reason, because there's a stronger rider or because of misfortune, as befell Mike Woods today, they always come in for a lot of sort of snark and criticism. I don't think that would be fair today, would it? They were very, very frustrated, understandably so. Mike was fuming at the finish, because not only did he not win, but he was denied an opportunity to even go for the win. And Riley Sheehan did a fantastic ride, pulling sort of single-handedly for a long time, to sort of turn the race, turn the stage back in the favour of the peloton. And I suppose Primoz Roglic has got them to thank for his bonus seconds and a lot of what happened on the final climb.
Yeah, that it's also, you know, in this case, of course, they committed, they were ambitious, they were thinking they had 2 or even 3 solid chances for a top 5 finish in Mike Woods, George Bennett and Matteo Ricciatello. But there is also a thought that goes beyond this Vuelta. They have 5 riders aged under 25 years old in this race. So taking the reins of a Grand Tour is a great experience for these kind of riders. It also makes them aware that they are capable of playing a role on one of cycling's biggest scenarios. So in that respect, as you were saying, Riley Sheehan doing that amount of work, it is a demonstration for himself and also a good stepping stone for the future. And maybe this, by doing what he did today, he earned himself a spot in the top team for next year. Maybe a spot for the Tour de France even.
Not all praise, though, because, of course, they should have made the break in the first place. It was kind of self-inflicted, you might say. Fran, UAE, they fell apart today, collapsed, for, I'm sure, an assortment of reasons. We didn't manage to speak to João Almeida. We wondered what happened to João Almeida. At one point, I saw he was 1 minute, this was on the final climb, I saw he was 1 minute, 44 seconds behind Primoz Roglic. I assumed that he'd got caught up in that crash. We still didn't know whether that was the case. I was then standing next to their team manager, Mauro Gianetti, at the finish, and I asked Mauro whether he knew whether Almeida had even finished. This was several minutes after the finish, and he said, no, he's still out there. And then the soigneurs contradicted him and said, no, he finished, but he's turned around and he's gone back down. I then spoke to Mauro after he'd spoken to his staff and also looked at the results and got a bit more clarity about what had happened today. So here's my conversation with Mauro Gianetti after the finish. So Mauro, not a good day at all for you guys. You haven't been in the car, so you didn't see everything. But what do you know about, first of all, João? He lost a lot of time today.
Today, João, we have had a bad day, and we will see now this evening with the doctor to check what happened. He don't feel good, and that we see, he lost more than 4 minutes. And it's clear, no, it's out for the GC, and it's what it is, no? Adam Yates, he was good, but not at his normal level. And Toro, he was unfortunately involved in the crash just on the bottom of the climb, and he lost a lot of time. He tried to do his best, and it's what it is. Unfortunately, we had also bad luck.
And when did you first find out that João was having problems? Did people know this morning? Did the team know this morning that he wasn't feeling well?
No, this morning everything was okay. And then we see in the final that he was in the last position of the peloton, 25-30K to the finish. And of course, it was not a nice signal, no, but there during the race, I don't know if he spoke with the sport director, because right now I don't spoke with the sport director. But just here on the finish, he say, oof, bad day, and then he turned. And so we have not had time to discuss with him.
So Isaac Del Toro looks as though he's going to be your GC guy from now on.
Yeah, but the GC, is if we play GC, and we need to play to be in the top five, no? And he's young, we will not push to do something that is unnormal. We will let him go like we decided to on the start of this Vuelta. Go enjoy enjoy the Vuelta, learn a big tour without stress to be in GC or do something. We will continue to let him free, and nothing changed. No, of course, we was here trying to win the Vuelta with João and, if possible, Adam. But João is with this, is not good, so we will not change the plan of a young guy because João is not good. So we are not in stress now because we are not leading the Vuelta.
So Fran, obviously Mauro didn't know exactly what was wrong with João Almeida today, but sickness seems to be the cause. Some kind of sickness could possibly be the cause of his heavy losses today. And, well, his free fall down the general classification, because he can no longer really be considered a factor, certainly as far as overall victory is concerned. He lost 23 places today, now 9 minutes down.
Yeah, he's out of contention, he's out of the picture now. What I wonder is as to which point this Vuelta is going to be played in seconds or in minutes, because there is a lot of terrain yet to be ridden. And we have seen, I was talking today with Cristian Rodriguez, the Spanish rider for Arkea Samsic, who is sitting now sixth on GC, if I am not mistaken, not sorry, seventh in GC. And he was telling me that all the GC teams were playing games from the very start, that he could see.
Kind of games?
Yeah?
What kind of games?
Well, they were just trying to attack and prevent other people.
Parlor games? Party games?
Board games?
Yeah.
No, but they're playing Risk.
Yes.
They're playing Risk, and they are taking risks by letting some breaks go and shutting down others.
Yeah.
And in that aspect, I believe that maybe the Vuelta is going to be turned upside down yet again. What some of these days? There next week we have three stages that are suited for a scenario like the one that we had on Thursday. A big range breakaway going away on narrow roads that don't allow the peloton to set up an effective chase. And in that regard, maybe having maybe Joao Almeida can still be useful for the team by supporting, by playing a support role on in that of in one of those breakaways, or by playing a tactic role. You know, having Almeida sit there puts you in a comfortable position. And on that regard, we shouldn't forget that Adam Yates is on par with Almeida now. So these two riders are out of the GC fight as of now, but can still be very useful for the team, and especially for a team that has to deploy long-range attacks and skirmishes if they want to be playing for podium.
Yeah, they would still wreak panic if they were to get into a move at this stage, both of them 9 minutes down. Fran, say you impressed me today, Antonio
Tiberi.
Yes. he has impressed me throughout the first week of this Vuelta a España, because he didn't look to be in great form coming into the race, certainly based on his performance at the Vuelta a Burgos. But he's fourth on German classification. He's just 5 minutes behind Ben O'Connor, and looked pretty silky today on the climb. Again, not a climb that will have suited him particularly, but he's riding very well. And we've got ourselves a humdinger of a white jersey or youth competition battle, because he leads. Van Etveld is 15 seconds down. Schelmer is 24 seconds down. Lipovic 25 seconds down. Superman is long gone. Miguel Angel Lopez. Sugarman Carlos Rodriguez, he is 56 seconds down. And Isaac Del Toro, 1 minute 32 seconds down. From you spoke to Antonio Tiberi briefly.
Yeah, and he was quite happy, satisfied, you know, upbeat. Yeah,
because Fran's mimicking the body language again. I love this. Go on.
Yeah, but so he was very upbeat about his performance, especially because this is a climb that doesn't suit him. He likes longer climbs, steadier climbs, like the ones that he's going to find in Granada and the ones that he's going to be tackling from now on. So I guess that he has reasons to be happy about his performance, especially as he's expecting to going better and better. He's one of those riders who has had 2-3 months to prepare for this Vuelta, as opposed to other riders who come straight from the Tour de France, like one of the riders that you are not excited about, which is Enric Mas.
I am excited about Enric Mas. I'm one of his biggest defenders. I described myself as an Enric Mas loyalist the other day. However, today, he didn't sit right with me, all these Spanish. I was surrounded by your compatriots sort of, baying for an Enric Mas victory, when Enric Mas had just sucked, let's be honest, he'd sucked Primoz Roglic's wheel throughout the last 2 kilometres. And the Roglification was pretty inevitable. It duly arrived. However, I thought it would have been a bit of a hollow victory for Enric Mas. It reminded me a bit of the finish at Valdepeñas de Jaén, not too far from here, a couple of years ago, when again Enric Mas was sort of limpet-like on Roglic's back wheel, and Roglic again managed to Roglify him there. But Enric Mas and the Vuelta, I mean, what a love affair that is. They are not on the rocks. Whatever George Bennett might say about couples that post pictures to conceal the fact they're on the rocks, the Vuelta and Enric Mas, they're certainly still very much in love. Fran, we're going to end part two with, well, we've just been talking about Antonio Tiberi. He's got a very strong teammate in Jack Haig. Jack Haig, whose performance today signified once again that he has returned to form, very much so. He was 10th on today's stage, and Jack is sitting very handily in 11th place on general classification. I spoke to Jack after the finish.
To be honest, I was feeling really good during the stage, and then I maybe went through a period there where we had the bonus sprint, and we went that small road, and I was starting to doubt myself a little bit there. I was like, oh, maybe I'm not so good. But as soon as we started the climb, I started a little bit far back, and I was actually behind, I think it was Sepp that crashed. And then I was with Carlos Rodriguez, and he kind of paced me back to the front group of maybe 7 or 8 there. Then, we went into sort of some attacking from Primoz. I tried to do a little bit of work there to help Antonio limit the losses. And then, yeah, this final steep part here was pretty gnarly. But, yeah, I'm really happy with how things are going. Things seem to have progressed quite a bit from the Tour de France, which is nice.
And on that steep climb like that, we're always going to see Primoz riding ahead, and he did, and he won the stage. Ben O'Connor limited the losses pretty well, but I think we all kind of would imagine he would lose time on these stages. He's to manage himself over the next 2 weeks if he wants to have a shot. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I think Ben just needs to keep doing what he's doing. Like, he's got 4.5 minutes to play with. The worst thing that can happen is him explode and lose that in one day. Whereas now, if he keeps losing 30 seconds, 20 seconds, a minute, he can do this quite often. And then, yeah, he can play for the jersey and definitely the podium.
Felix Gall's trying to do for O'Connor what you're doing for Thibaut. He lost O'Connor in the end. How hard is it to keep track of your leader on a climb like that?
It's quite hard, and also on a climb like this where the speeds aren't so high, especially at the finish. Before the last maybe 1 kilometre, it's quite important to have someone there help with pacing. But I think it will take a little bit of time for Felix to sort of realise what exactly he needs to do. I'm struggling a little bit with Antonio because everyone sort of has their own way of racing. And I don't think I've done a race with Antonio. So this is my first time with him, and I actually find it much easier to work with, for example, Santiago Petrago, because we've done it quite a bit together. I'm quite good friends with him, and Antonio, I just haven't had time to get to know him yet. And I hope during this race I can start to build that relationship, because I think it's super important to sort of know what they want without them having to tell you or having to signal it to you.
Your confidence must be surging back, Jack, at this point.
Yeah, mate, I'm happy. I went through a really hard maybe 8 months since Paris-Nice and Catalunya, and I suffered so much through the Tour de France. I really actually didn't enjoy it that much. I was quite lucky that maybe Santiago was there, and I really found some satisfaction trying to help him do well. But yeah, it wasn't the most enjoyable time for me. So I was nervous coming here, but I'm happy with how it's going so far.
Well, Fran, we have moved. We have moved up the mountain, up the hill. A lot of cars are really struggling to get up here today, as is often the case with these summit finishes. The car park is sort of in a field adjacent to the finish line, and today's is very severely sloping, and there are a lot of tyres spinning and a lot of clutches burning. The grass here as well is also extremely burnt, isn't it? And which is a reflection of temperatures in recent days.
Have you ever burnt a clutch on a second race?
Yes, many times.
Yeah, I have done it twice.
Yeah. Talking of burning, Fran, if I'm not careful, I'll be burning my bridge with Lucky Larry Warbus, because he sent me a voice message the other day celebrating his teammate Ben O'Connor, his Decathlon teammate Ben O'Connor, taking the red jersey in the Vuelta a España. And I promised Larry that I would play his voice message on Cycling Podcast. And I did not do that. However, tonight, 3 days late, here is what Larry thinks of Ben O'Connor taking the red jersey and how long he could keep it. Bear in mind that, yeah, this was recorded 3 days ago before today's time losses.
Hey, Daniel. it was pretty sweet to see Ben take the jersey today. And yeah, he definitely had a really, really impressive ride today. So that was cool to see. I think he impressed everyone, including, yeah, a lot of us, his teammates. You know, I thought, like, you know, Ben, he had a baby this summer, and he's like a new dad, and he told me he was in good shape, but, you know, it was hard to see. You know, he was maybe, I think he was 11th at San Sebastian, and it didn't go so well for him on that first big mountain day. But one thing about Ben is, like, if he has a bad day like that, it really pisses him off. And when he's pissed off, he comes back a lot stronger. So that was kind of cool to see him just rebound like that, to be able to take the leader's jersey and to complete the, you know, a stage win in each of the Grand Tours is pretty huge. I think for our team, to control and have the leader's jersey is pretty great. They have actually a really strong team at the Vuelta. Even right now they're sitting first, 9th, and 11th on GC, I think. So, they have a pretty solid group if they need to ride the front and control, which is great. But, yeah, I don't know. I could see Ben definitely being the top five overall. I think it'll be hard for him to win the race, but you know, never say never. And I guess, yeah, we'll see what happens in the next days. But I believe he can definitely be in the top five. we'll see.
La Vuelta Sartorial. The Sartorial Vuelta.
So, Fran, that was Lucky Larry, and this is the Vuelta Sartorial, in which we dig out unstitched critique clothing artifacts of Vueltas a España of yesteryear. Today, Fran, well, you've seen the jersey. Describe it.
So it's a black and white jersey.
Cream and brown, Fran. Not
cream
black
and brown.
Black and white.
Okay, my positive bias towards black and white was going to make me say that it was beautiful. Now I find it okay.
Offensive.
No, but it has grains of coffee spread all over the cream background.
Grains of coffee, so sort of illustrations of coffee grains. They could be leaves actually looking at them, but the jersey is also, there's one, well, there's a Vuelta a España, there's some text in the over the sort of left, no, right breast, which says Vuelta a España, and over the left breast says Café de Colombia. We are talking about the King of the Mountains jersey from the 1987 Vuelta a España. It was sponsored by Café de Colombia. Franz already described it. In the 1987 Vuelta, Café de Colombia also had a team and, in fact, would go on to win the race with their leader, Lucho Herrera. But not before a very nervous final stage for Herrera, a.k.a. El Jardinerito, the Little Gardener. Why was it nervous? Well, the rider who was sporting the coffee bean King of the Mountains jersey was Laurent Fignon. Although Herrera actually led the classification, but he was also in the leader's jersey of the race. So Fignon was wearing the coffee beans. He had won in spectacular fashion in Avila, 4 days from the end. I'm talking about Fignon. And Herrera and his fellow Colombians feared crosswinds on the last day. So much so that they paid Fignon's System U team 30,000 francs per rider not to participate in any attacks or echelons on this final day. What Herrera didn't know was that Fignon was homesick. A Frenchman revealed all of this in his autobiography years later. When the organisers put back the stage start time on the last day because of howling tailwind, Fignon started to worry that he would miss his flight that evening. And so, when the race started, the Frenchman rode like his backside was on fire. Herrera hung on for dear life and did cross the line with his advantage over second place rider Raymond Dietzen intact, while Fignon remained in third place overall. Not that Fignon had any intention of sticking around for the podium presentation. He made a beeline for the airport. As he wrote later, I was driven to the airport, still in my racing kit, so still in the coffee bean jersey. Before taking the plane that would fly me home, I got changed in the public toilets like a common thief. I desperately wanted to get away. It was shameful. He added, I'd had enough of Spain. But I left the tour of Spain with my head hanging. It was an affront to the organisers, but my mind was elsewhere. Not that I have any idea where. So that was the 1987 Vuelta a España. And it's coffee bean King of the Mountains jersey. Fran, it was the same design in 1988 and 1989. The coffee bean jersey was worn by Álvaro Pino in 1988 and Oscar de Jesus Vargas in 1989. King of the Mountains jersey became green from 1990, and Café de Colombia also pulled out of cycling, I believe it was at the end of 1990.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. And more recently, the Vuelta Cantabria Femenina has also had a very similar coffee bean King of the Mountains jersey, because that competition was sponsored by Café Dromedario.
Vuelta Cantabria Femenina, that is organized by a UAE team mechanic, Roberto Sanemeterio, who has a long-standing cycling school that is mainly focused on women. And from its pipeline, we have seen pass many current professional riders like Sheila Gutierrez or Lucia and Laura Ruiz Pérez racing now for Movistar Team.
Fran, time to talk not about coffee but about food, and also about what's on the menu tomorrow, because that is at the forefront of our mind as we end this day on the Vuelta a España. It's time for La Cena de Ayer and La Etapa de Mañana.
La etapa de mañana, la cena de ayer. Tomorrow's stage, yesterday's food.
Fran, last night's dinner was a good one in Córdoba. I said I was very much looking forward to it. I didn't manage to get my chops around a flamenquín, as discussed yesterday.
You didn't?
I didn't, Fran. They were on the menu, but we were out with our colleague Andy Hood of Velo, and he always insists on getting the jamón ibérico, and this sort of disoriented me. I had other plans for what I was going to order afterwards, and I was in that sort of
conundrum.
Entrante and plato principal, sort of twilight zone in between. I didn't really know whether to go for another starter or main course. Anyway, one thing I will mention, I had a gazpacho with albahaca ice cream, basil ice cream. That was wonderful.
Yes.
A great combination that I would recommend. It's quite a difficult thing to whip up at home, basil-flavoured ice cream, but give it a try.
Yeah, and gazpacho actually mixes quite well with many, many other foods, and you can be very, you know, you can put your imagination to work, and it nearly fits with everything. For one, I had flamenquín, Daniel, and flamenquín in Córdoba is always delicious.
Delicious is what we hope tomorrow's stage will be from as well. It's kind of your home stage.
It is.
The home stage for various people in the peloton, isn't it? There's an expat for whom it's sort of a home stage. Victor Campanas, we talked about that earlier, although he's more sort of connected to Malaga. A lot of the riders tomorrow do know the climbs because they'll have done them in the Vuelta a España, but they'll also have done them at training camps in the Sierra Nevada. Fran, present tomorrow's stage for us, if you will.
Yeah, and we can't forget, because tomorrow we are starting from Motril, a village with a huge port in this one of the biggest ports in southern Spain, and it's 20 kilometers from Almuñécar, which happens to be Carlos Rodriguez's birthplace, and also the village on which I have rented for myself and my girlfriend an apartment for next week.
Current girlfriend, not ex-girlfriend.
No, current girlfriend. And so from Motril, they head inland through the Alpujarra, they pass through Lanjarón, a name that is probably sounding familiar for anyone that has traveled to Spain, as it is one of the most famous and renowned water brands in Spain. We reach the city of Granada at kilometer 80, and from then we tackle three category one climbs that are going to be race defining. We are climbing to the Puerto de El Purche, a climb that it's unforgettable because it is there that Alexandre Vinokourov and Andrei Kashekin dropped Alejandro Valverde in the 2006 Vuelta a España, and afterwards they tackle the Alto de Azayanas, a gruelingly steep climb, and they are going to face it twice. And indeed, the intention of the Vuelta organizers was to have it three times, but they didn't, because they couldn't find a more suited a village to host the start that was closer to Granada than Motril was. And that's why the riders got spared one climb of this Azayanas climb. The numbers say everything. It's 7.1 kilometers at 9.5%. But bear in mind that the final kilometers is 4.6. That means that it's double-digit gradients from the bottom to the top. If you want, do you remember that kilometer zero that we did with Richard back in the day, on which I was panting on the microphone of my mobile phone as I was climbing Azayanas.
We'll dig out a clip for tomorrow.
Yeah?
Yeah, we will. I'll do that for you, Fran.
Okay.
Another extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary thing about Azayanas is that in the mix zone this afternoon after the stage, Primoz Roglic remembered its name. I don't think Primoz Roglic has ever remembered the name of a climb in all of my years of interviewing him. 7-8 years usually he sort of looks at you kind of with a fairly absent expression and says, it will be harder, you know what I mean, huh?
Yeah, and one important factor to mention, we mentioned it already earlier, but it's still, I think it's a key factor as for how the race will unfold and what the ending will be like, is that we have a 23 kilometer rolling white descent to Granada. That means that probably there will be some regrouping on the way down from Azayanas to Granada.
It looks like a cracking stage. Could be the queen stage.
Yes.
It's going to be hot. It's going to be exciting. And we will be there, Fran, until tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, listeners.
Sexy voice.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Byrne. Que nos vamos de aquí.